Welcome to another episode of the Josh Scanlon Podcast, my friends. It is June 15th, 2018, coming at you live and in person from North Fulton County, Georgia. About 93 degrees out there. Woo, it is hot and muggy, as you'd find here in the Deep South. But excited to have this conversation with you here today because it's part of an episode, a debate of some sorts I've been having some fellow financial planners on a Facebook page and part of. And I wanted to kind of bring it to your attention because there's some morality in this involved in this. And it's one of those things that I find in financial planning that sometimes common sense, sometimes I think common sense can miss a little bit. So let me tell you a little bit about the situation. You may be aware of the big three unfunded liabilities in the United States. Those are Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And what happens is every time you get paid, you pay FICA taxes. And the FICA taxes consist of 6.2% to Social Security. And I think the rest is, 1.45 to Medicare. So your total taxes are 7.65 and your employer pays the same. All right. So what happens is the bulk of that tax is going to Social Security, which is retirement income. And ironically, that is the least threatened of the three. All right. Social Security is the least threatened in terms of solvency of the big three unfunded liabilities. But even that, we know Social Security is not solvent. If nothing has changed by 2033, they're only going to be able to pay out 70 cents on the dollar. You know, there's lots going to happen between now and then. And it's not dying on the vine, but certainly in not quite dire straits, but will be. If you're planning on a dollar for dollar, at some point, Social Security needs to adjust that because right now they don't have the money to do that come 2033. All right. But that's the most solvent of the three. And that's your retirement income. All right. So the other one's Medicare, and that you pay into that, like I said, was at 1.45 each and every paycheck, which means when you get to 65 and above, you get quote unquote free health care. But it ain't free, my friends. Trust me. Medicare is not free. You still have premiums, Part D premiums. Part A covers hospitalization of Medicare. Part B is doctors and things of that nature. And Part D is for your prescription drugs. There is no Part A premium. That is free. But Part B and Part D can run you about $188 a month right now or more, depending on what your adjusted gross income is. And so per person is roughly, you'll just say $200 a month of premiums. On top of that, you still have co-pays, you still have co-insurance, you still have deductibles, the whole thing. So Medicare is not free. It is just one of those instances where you cannot be denied coverage. Which is, whatever. It is what it is. You know, good or bad or indifferent, doesn't matter. It is what it is and is there. So once you hit 65, at least you know you have health coverage. Whether or not you actually have health care is a completely different scenario because doctors are not forced as slaves to work for Medicare patients. They don't have to. They can do these concierge practices, and more doctors are doing that because they recognize the hassle of filing through insurance and just the incredibly inefficiency, never mind outright fraud. So a lot of doctors, I don't say a lot, but there are enough doctors going completely pay-as-you-go that there's going to be less and less help on the Medicare side as you go forward. But that, again, the Medicare is not anything else other than being 65. Once you're 65, you sign up for 3 months before you're 65, you sign up for Medicare, and you have coverage, but you do have costs that go in with that. And you've been paying into that since day one, since you've been working. All right. Now, the Latin Medicare is certainly hurt for sure. There's no other way around that. Medicare, the fraud on Medicare is immense, actually. And I don't know why more isn't done to go after these fraudsters, because there's a lot of them out there and they're making bulk big bucks right there. And it's not good. All right. The last one is Medicaid. Now, Medicaid is for anybody who's poor. All right. Indigent people. Medicare is for, it doesn't matter what your income is. It matters that your age. You have to be 65 to get Medicare. Medicaid is for anyone who's poor. All right. Again, poverty bound, poverty stricken. So what happens with Medicaid, because it's been expanding under Obamacare like crazy. I mean, these states are just, they're bribed into expanding Medicaid because the Democrats wanted to make a Medicare for all under the auspices of Medicaid. And so what happened was Obamacare, they gave these states just billions of dollars to expand their Medicaid programs to get more and more people on the government health insurance rolls. And, you can debate that all you want, but that's a fact. It's exactly what happened. Your states were given a huge incentive to jump on board, which is what John Kasich, for instance, Ohio, recognizing his state has some funding problems, said he could get a bunch of money from the feds if he just signed on to Medicaid expansion. And he did. It worked. It worked like a charm. The federal government bribed Ohio to sign on for Medicaid with lots of money to provide that expansion. The problem is, it's just a Band-Aid on what has been a gushing blood wound for sure, simply because Medicaid has less money than Medicare, which has less money than Social Security. We're expanding Medicaid on top of that. And then on top of that, the federal government, which doesn't have any money, was giving all these states huge bribes to expand their Medicaid expansion as well. And what happened was they'd say, hey, we'll give you, I don't know, $10 billion. And all you got to do is cough up $500 million in the first couple of years. And, you know, the thing about politics is that the governor says, hey, that's great. In 5-10 years, when, you know, the chickens come home to roost, I'll be long gone. And it makes me look good in the interim. And so basically a guy like John Kasich says, yeah, I'll expand it. I get all this extra money coming from the feds. I can use that for the general fund. Looks like I'm paying down debt. I'm balancing the budget, blah, blah, blah. It'll come 2025 or whatever it is, 2020, actually, probably. The government part of that huge incentive is gone, the federal government part. And now the state is left with 50% that they have to commit to paying for the Medicaid, including the expansion. It's very convoluted, but inherently it's actually a good strategy as an Obama for wanting to get Medicaid expansions, for sure. Because both Obama and Kasich will be gone when the time comes for Ohio and all these other states to pay the piper. All right. So what happens? Why am I talking about this? I wanted to give you a background on what's going on. So we're expanding Medicaid. It's already dying on the vine for sure. Now, in financial planning vernacular, there's something called Medicaid planning. And what that consists of is trying to make you a paper pauper, poor, so you can get government health care without hardly any cost to you. And the problem with that is that it's unethical, because Medicaid is for poor people. And what these financial planning folks are trying to say is to somebody who is not poor that they need to make themselves look poor on paper in order to qualify for Medicaid services, which don't cost them anything. But the issue is they have the resources in which to pay for it themselves. They do. They have the resources. They're just hiding those in the concept of either giving away to their children or, even worse, in trusts. And yet it's not like they're without, but yet they're acting like they're without so they can get on the government dole. And the issue I'm having with some of these financial planners are people like saying, well, it's not fair that, you know, a frugal guy saved all his money and all that and doesn't get government assistance, where his twin brother might have been a spendthrift and gets all the assistance. And I sit there and I'm stunned at, I don't get it, because I'm sitting there thinking the guy who is frugal had the ability, in order to save for himself, he has a resource on which to pay for himself. The guy who is not does not. And regardless of how the guy who's poor, real poor, got there, he doesn't have the ability to pay for it. He doesn't. That's why we pay taxes for Medicaid, to provide for people who are indigent, who are poverty stricken, regardless of how they got there. And this guy's argument was, well, yeah, but that's not fair to the guy who's diligent and saved. I said, the life isn't fair. It's not fair you're born in the United States of America. How many people would kill to live here? And yet here we are, you know, just complaining all the time. That's not fair either. The idea of fairness is insane to me. The code isn't about equity. The code is about making sure that people can't afford to get the services they need, so they don't die on the street. It's that simple. It's weird. And I don't understand this idea that we're going to take grandma, we're going to put her money in these trusts, or we're going to give it away so that way she can get care from the government. And yet at the same time, her family will still get the full inheritance. And that's what Medicaid planning is. Medicaid planning is saying, Grandma Jones, you have $2 million. We're going to give it away. So you no longer own it and you no longer have any control. We're going to give it away into a trust, for instance, which you are not the trustee. Someone else controls it. And theoretically, it won't be one of your heirs, because that would violate the idea of keeping in the lineal descent in the lineal family. So you're saying, I give it to this trust. This trust is run by what's called a trustee, you know, Joni down the street. Now, what Joni can do with that money, though, is she can take out money and spend it on grandma. So grandma isn't any worse for the wear. It's just she no longer controls it. And there's a big risk there, because Joni theoretically could steal it for sure. But at grandma's death now, all that money gets transferred from the trust into the kids. And all you're doing is you're saying at the end of the day, we don't want to lose any inheritance from my children. I don't want to lose any income for myself, but I also want to get government benefits. And the problem is there isn't any government. There's not a magical tree of dollars that are just flowing down, my friends, that can provide these benefits to anybody. It's empty. It's bankrupt. And it's getting worse. And yet the poor people are still there. So the more and more people claim poverty to get on the government dole, it's completely a zero-sum game. Excuse me, completely. If I get money from Medicaid, that inherently means someone else does not have it. There's no two ways around that. And if I have money from Medicaid, even though I have the ability to pay for it myself, and I'm taking it from somebody else who needs it, I find that to be a challenge. I don't find that to be kosher. I really don't. And to plan for that eventuality just boggles my mind. I just don't understand it. You're saying I want you to get the government dole, which takes away from people who need it, just so we can make sure you don't live. And you're not going to have to be expected to live any worse than you currently are. And on top of that, your kids are going to get the money nonetheless. And another way they do it is they say, not only am I going to give it to a trust, I'll just give it outright to my children. And I know my children will take care of me and they can spend all the money they world on they want on me from your money. Now I'm going to give the government dole. And it boggles my mind how that seems legitimate to me. And the thing about fairness is like the prodigal son is, I mean, they're. It boggles my mind because I'm sitting there thinking the guy who's been frugal, who's been diligent, can provide for himself. Isn't that a win for him? I mean, is the idea of him having to pay an extra couple thousand bucks a year? That's not fair. It seems to me I don't get it. That is, he's better off. He's in a better position than the guy who blew all his money on cocaine. No one would argue that, it seems to me, just because he's being told and held accountable. Like, hey, man, you got to take care of your own because you have the ability to do so. I don't see how that's a slight on his equity. I don't see how that's not fair to him. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. So the point about this whole thing, when you hear Medicaid planning, what they're saying is they're going to make it so you can plead paper poverty. You're not poor. You're not poor. You're just saying on paper you're poor. You're going to plead poverty by moving your assets from point A, i.e. your ownership and control, to someone else's ownership and control, and then you're still going to get the benefit for sure. Now, some states like West Virginia are keen to this now. They've seen this. They say, look, Grandma, if you're going to do this Medicaid planning, because in West Virginia, a very poor state, Medicaid is a huge portion of their overall state budget. Huge. And don't forget, every state is responsible for a significant portion of the Medicaid expenditures. So each state has significant parts of their budget. Something like, I think West Virginia, this is like 10 years ago, like 25% or something like that of the state budget went to Medicaid, basically to take care of their poor people. Huge Medicaid budgets deficits for all of these individual states, never mind the feds. So West Virginia says, okay, you're going to try that on us? We're going to look back 10 years to make sure you did not just give all that money yesterday and plead poverty yesterday. We're going to look back to see what your accounts were like 2 years ago, 3 years, all the way 10 years ago to make sure you're not trying to cheat the system. Now, why would a state like West Virginia do that? Are they doing it because they're the evilest people in the world? No, because they know Medicaid is dying on the vine. They know there is no money there, but they also have an obligation to take care of the truly indigent. And if Grandma Jones has $2 million and is claiming Medicaid poverty on papers to get for Medicaid, West Virginia knows for a fact they don't have the money. They don't. They are going broke. Medicaid is a significant burden on the states. Each and every state is a significant, which means the taxpayers of said state and the taxpayer of the federal government, me and you, my friends, are going to be responsible to increase our taxes to make sure Grandma Jones got that Medicaid when she should not have. And that's not right. That's not fair. Who pays for this stuff? It's the taxpayer. So why is it fair for Grandma Jones to get it when you and I are going to increase our taxes in order to pay for her to get it when she should have paid for her own health insurance herself? That's absolutely in terms of, so all these people say fairness. I'm like, whoa, how's it fair to us? How's it fair to us? So when you hear something called Medicaid planning, remember, that's all they're saying is we're going to make you look like you're poor so you can qualify for the government assistance. And the first thing that should come to your mind, if you're a normal human being, is like, who's going to pay for that? Who's going to pay for that? because right now Medicaid doesn't have any money. It's getting worse and worse and worse. So who's going to pay for that? And the answer is going to be you and me as a taxpayer, ultimately responsible for paying for that. And on top of that, Grandma Jones's kids and grandkids are still going to get the inheritance from Grandma Jones, because that's how Medicaid works. Medicaid planning works. You put this money in a trust, it bypasses you, so it looks like it's out of your estate, it looks like you're poor, and yet at the end of the day, you're like I said, your heirs still get the full amount. So states like West Virginia were on that. 10 years of the look back, what's called a clawback period, which means if they catch you doing it, you're going to pay back what they sent, what they paid to you for your government assistance. All right. Secondly, what is Medicaid? You ever been to a Medicaid facility? So if you need long-term care, you need to go to a nursing home. And I've talked about this a bunch of times. That it's not that big of a contention. Not that many people are truly going to be in nursing homes for a significant amount of their life. It's just not going to happen. But let's say it did and you didn't have the resources. You go to a Medicaid facility, all right? Medicare does not provide nursing home coverage. Medicaid does. And these facilities are, I mean, it's like going back in Charles Dickens' time. I'm sure there's a couple that are out there that are fine. The ones I've been to, man, it is just not a good place to spend your dying days. That's for sure. And these facilities are just, it's just bad. No other way around that. So the stench is, oh, it hits you like a ton of bricks when you walk in there. Now, Medicaid does provide in-home care. They will provide a lady, or I guess a guy, but a lady generally to come to your home and do some basic stuff for you as well, so you can still be in the comfort of your home. And a lot of people say, well, that's what I want. Well, that's not free. Someone's got to pay for that, because that lady's got to come on out and someone's still paying for that. And so, again, you can get in-home health care with Medicaid. That's a fact. A lot of people do. And it's better than going to a nursing home for sure. Now, some nursing homes, they'll have beds that for Medicaid. It's almost like some of these Section 8 housing units will be in these big, you know, high-rise condominiums or something like that. They're wealthy. For them to get the approval to build, they got to get some Section 8 in there. And so to put, like, you know, 8% of the units would be Section 8 or whatever. And that way they can get the approval by the, you know, the authorities, whoever they may be. In Obama's case, the Department of Justice, they said, we need to get more diversity. So they said, any kind of building entity you want to do, you're going to have to add, you're going to have to allow for moderate to low income people, i.e. Section 8 people to be in there. And so that's the same thing with Medicare or long-term care facilities, the private ones. There'll always be, not always, a lot of times there'll be some beds that are available for Medicaid recipients just so they can get the approval to build those facilities out. I don't know who those people are. And if you're lucky enough to get in one, more power to you. The vast majority of people do not get those facilities at all. They just don't. And so at the end of the day, the level of service, the level of care, the actual place you go to for Medicaid is just not something you want your mom to go to. That's just a fact. And the reason I say your mom, because if you look at long-term care facilities and nursing homes, there's vast majority of those people are women. They're not men, they're women. Just because women live longer. That's just a fact. And so what you'll find is a bunch of women in there. And if it's a Medicaid facility, it's just not a great place that you want your mom, for sure. Now, can they come home? Yep, they can have some Medicaid. Like I said, Medicaid can provide in-home care. That's for sure. Is it the best quality care? I'll let you be the judge of that. You know, my knowledge of it is anecdotal. It's not the best quality. Doesn't mean it's horrific. It's just not the best quality. That's for sure. Let's just put it that way. It's just not what you want your mom to have. Okay. And then if you go to a nursing home, like I said, it's not the place you want her to be, for sure. And at the end of the day, someone's still got to pay for that. And then someone is going to be you and me, the taxpayer. So it's the three things. We want to reduce the people on Medicaid. We don't want to expand it, because right now Medicaid is dead in the water. It has no money. It's dying in terms of the cash flow. And there's only one way to rectify this, which is reduce benefits or increase taxes. So what Medicaid planners want to do is they want to go against what is inherently obvious to anyone who will open their eyes, that Medicaid can't afford more people going on the system. And the more people go on the system, the less benefits there are for the people who truly need it. The more people that go on the system, the less benefits there are for the people who truly need it, the more they're going to have to tax us in order to provide those benefits, those people who truly need it, even though you can afford it to pay for yourself. All right, so that's my moral objection. I just want you to know, whenever you hear, I need to do some Medicaid planning, no, you don't. You've been blessed with the ability to take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. It's absolutely. You've been blessed with that ability. Don't squander that by saying I'm going to pretend I'm poor just so I can get government assistance. It's just don't do that. All right. Well, I hope this helps. That's a 20-minute mark on there. I know it's a little bit rambling. Don't care. It's just something that's near and dear to my heart when I hear the Medicaid planning scenario stuff. All right. The song of the day here is going to be one. Actually, I just listened on a walk today by the old Mighty Mighty Bosstones. I don't know if you ever heard of those guys. They were fantastic in their late 80s, early 90s. One of those bands that whenever they did a show, it was a show to be seen. And I've always loved bands like that. There's a hardcore band out of New York City called Madball. I'll never forget seeing them in a basically a redneck bar in Manassas, Virginia. It's a couple of my buddies and me. And we went to go see these guys, probably 8 guys at the show and, drunkards sitting around the bar. And these guys still put on a show, man. And I always respected bands that do that, even when there's no audience there or a small audience. They still gave it their best. They felt blessed to be able to get on stage and get paid for that. These guys drove down from New York City. They still, who knows? I mean, there might have been a guy in there that they still gave it their all. And I've always had much respect for anyone who's an entertainer, no matter what the circumstance, who puts his 100% in. I just found that to be I respect. And my Bosstones are known for that as well. Their shows are all, and I don't know what they're, I don't even know if they're still around. I presume they're not. They got a little bit of acclaim, I think, in the mid 1990s. I think they're on some pretty poppy movie that got a lot of fame. And that probably led to some fortune for them too. And I think they had a couple songs that were pretty top hits, but this song is going to be called Where'd You Go off their second album. I think it was their second album. And the reason I want to play this song is because when I got out of the Army, I was working at UPS. I was going to college and I was drinking a lot of beers and I had given up beers one time after I got in a fight with a friend of mine because I was a 90% happy drunk, but 10% of the time I was just a mean drunk. And unfortunately, this is one of the times where I just being a mean drunk, I got offended by something my friend said, and it was stupid because he didn't say anything. But when you're stupid and drunk, and anyway, it's embarrassed. I'm still embarrassed to this day. Nothing I can do about it. But anyway, so I said I got to give up drinking, and I gave up drinking for a little bit. And then I had a friend of mine from the Army who was up in New Hampshire, and he said he was moving back to D.C. or somebody was coming down to D.C. and he wanted a party. I was like, no, I don't want a party. I'm trying to quit drinking and all that. And anyway, so in the interim, he was coming down. In the interim, I was listening to this album by Mighty Mighty Bosstones called More Noise and Other Disturbances. This is a great album. And I just got back from UPS. This guy was getting ready to come down. And I remember, I think I was like broken up with girlfriend or something. I can't remember, but I was in a great mood. I wasn't like, it was just like, ugh. It wasn't down and out. It was just like, ugh. And I remember listening to this song, and it's called Where'd You Go? It's about this guy, his girlfriend left. This dude goes home, his girlfriend's gone, all that. It's kind of where I was a little bit. I can't remember the exact circumstance, but it's kind of where I was. And he had this lyric, goes, poured a beer into a cup. And I don't know why that hit me in the head like a ton of bricks. And I ran up to the local 7-Eleven there. I got a 6-pack and poured a beer into the cup. For some reason, that made me want to drink again. And I hadn't drank probably in a couple weeks. I remember, I think 3 weeks hadn't gone by. And I'll never forget that. That one song, that one thing, poured a beer into a cup. And it always stuck with me. This is almost 30 years ago now, my friends. And it always stuck. That was like 1993, 1992, something like that. Poured a beer into a cup. And that's one of the lyrics. It's a great song, Where'd You Go? And I just, for some reason, that stuck with me. The point is, when you're fighting stuff that you know you shouldn't be doing, whatever it is, you're never free. You always, and this is what AA says all the time. That's what they say, one day at a time. Because I don't know if I'll drink beer 10 years from now. I don't know if I'll drink beer 10 minutes from now. I do know I'm not going to drink beer right now. And 1 minute, 1 second, one day at a time, because you don't know the things that sneak up that change your methodology in terms of your thinking. Oh, I can handle that. And that's exactly what happened. I remember I heard that, pour a beer to a cup. I just got back from work. I used to work the 5 to 10 night shift at UPS after school, loading up these trucks. It was a hard job, man. And I just got back. I was not depressed, but just kind of, and I said, yeah, I feel like a beer. When I heard that song, I went to go get the beer, and I hadn't. 5 years later, I quit again. Thank God, and that was the last time. But those 5 years were tough, kind of traumatic. Had a lot of things could have gone wrong, and thank the good Lord they didn't. But a lot of things could have in that interim there, those 5 years. And I don't say it's my boss's fault. I just know that at the end of the day, when you have an issue, an addictive personality of some sort, you never know what's going to jump out at you to make you go back that road of where you're trying to escape from. And just a simple lyric to a simple song did it for me. And it can do it for you too. That's why you always got to be on your guard. And you always got to say, whatever it is that you're contending with, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but right now I can control whether or not I go to the store and get a beer. Right now I can control whatever it is that you're addicted to, and just don't do it. That one right now, don't light up that cigarette. Whatever it is, this I cannot control the future, but I can control what I do right now. And I had never thought about it. And then I'll just until I went back to AA 5 years later, when we moved to Phoenix, I had just given up. I quit in May of 1997. We moved to Phoenix in August of 1997. Had some stuff going on personally in my life, and I remember going as just kind of fired up, you know, wasn't drinking, but I went to AA, and I'll never forget this old raggedy guy. He said, "Look, you just got to get this. You're letting other people control you, man. You got to stop. You got to take care of your own feelings. And remember, the first way to do that is to say, I can't control what other people do, but I can control what I do. I'm going to control that I don't drink right now. I can control that I'm happy." And I tell you, some old raggedy guy, I just probably just crawled out from under the gutter, but I don't remember that guy's name, but bless him, because he was a big impact on my life. Control what you can today. I can't control anybody else. And I can control what I can do right now, and that's it. And once you kind of have that, it's so much easier to contend with your peccadilloes, whatever they are. Don't worry about the future. Worry about now, how you deal with it right now. And that's all you can do. And the rest is up to the good Lord. Really, it is. I mean, at the end of the day, God's in charge. And if you don't believe in God, well, you're not in charge. That's all there is to it. You aren't. You're in charge of your actions today, but you're not in charge of what happens in the future. And you can never go back and live your past. And as much as I'm ashamed of a lot of things I've done, I wouldn't change it for the world, because where I'm at today is where I like to be. And if all of these things I did in the past that are shameful, in my opinion, would not have put me where I am today. And so as much as they disappoint me, and as much as it bothers me that I hurt people, at the end of the day, I can't change it. And I'm not saying I'm comfortable with it, but I feel that it's a learning experience that brought me to where I am today, which is in a pretty good place. And I just hope the same for you, my friends. It's always never a bad idea to get on your knees, pray to the good Lord. Yeah, I do believe fully in the good Lord, of which Jesus Christ is a son of the Lord. For sure, is the only son of God, came to the world to take the sins off our shoulders, was killed on a cross, execution style, so that the gates of heaven would open up for not just those who believe, but for those who believe and ask for forgiveness. And remember, if God can forgive you, why can't you forgive you? And that's what I'd tell myself all the time. Like, man, I can't believe I did that when I was 26 years old. I asked God for forgiveness. God told me he forgives. Thus, I forgive myself. I'm embarrassed, but I forgive myself. Because if God can forgive me, who the heck am I to not be able to forgive myself? And I hope the same for you as well. All right. So with that, I'll close up shop here, my friends. And I hope you enjoyed the episode. As always, subscribe. Go to the heritagewealthplanning.com for the podcast, the blog, the video that I do there, the YouTube Heritage Wealth Planning. So just go to youtube.com/heritagewealthplanning. And I will see you next time on the Josh Gannon podcast. Thanks, guys.
Where did you go? Where did you go? Where did you go? Out in the fridge, I let the mirror played a tape I couldn't hear. And then it's beginning. Where did you go? I wondered when, where did you go? I shrunk him up from the back step. Thought about the last few years. I lost control. I swear I tried. I put the cold and waited. Tried to pack my face and called a friend. Wish you sent in his wood. Wrote a note, then tore it up. Pulled the beer into a cup. Sat on the couch, drank it slow. Wondering where did you go? I realized I couldn't stay. Grabbed my things and went away.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.